okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 136 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, mate. How many times have you said that, I wonder? Well, you've said that 136
I'm guessing about 136 times. Yeah.
And with me on the line from Melbourne is, via Skype.
Yeah, just for something totally different.
I'm not saying you're becoming predictable, mate. I'm really not. But after 136
you know
times,
what? Probably the first 20 seconds of this podcast is predictable, and after that, all bets are off.
As, yeah, a la last week's podcast.
Yeah.
How'd that go over? Have you had any bad news on that one? Did people think, oh, for Pete's sake, what's going on? No?
If they did, they didn't write and tell me that.
Oh, good.
They kept it to themselves.
Well, I know on your forum it's actually created a little bit of an interesting discussion we can address later if you like.
Sure, you know. Yeah, if you, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I know that you were a bit worried about the sound quality, and that's fair enough, but
a little.
That was an interesting discussion.
I think. Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, as much as, you know, as I said to you when we spoke through the week, you know, my key thing that I'm most precious about in terms of my brand with AudioToYou.com is the quality of the audio.
Yeah.
And to me, that is paramount. You know, there are a lot of podcasts out there that have very good content but don't share the great production quality that my podcasts have.
Mm.
And to me, that is my point of difference. It's great content as well as well-produced. And so to me, that is key. Having said that, when an opportunity like last week presents itself where, you know, Richard had come back from August exposure, massively pumped up.
Yes.
You want to capitalize on that. Even if it does mean dropping your standard, you know, just for that one occasion.
Having Richard on the show does drop the standard. That's for them.
Oh, low blow.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. You were talking about the sound. Sorry, mate. Sorry.
You're nasty. yeah, so anyway.
My son was on the show as well, but you notice I didn't mention him.
And it was good to hear him as well, too.
Yeah. So. He is so pumped about this coming weekend, I tell
is
you
he?
What. Oh, seriously. Yeah, he just wants to grab his camera and shoot something.
Mate, I'm pumped
so
as well.
Proud. Yeah. And if you're wondering what we're talking about, folks, we have an incredible weekend of activity coming up in Echuca, which is on the border between Victoria and New South Wales along the Murray River there. And that's for our overseas friends, because, of course, everyone in Australia knows where that is. But we're really looking forward. We're running creative photo workshops, which is part of a sort of a new partnership that I have going on at the moment. We are running a
Bruce? It's just a weekend workshop.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone who listens to this podcast has or should know by now that over the last, you know, 6 to 12 months, Shelton's been doing these photography workshops, you know, and they're generally a one-day workshop, and it might be a wedding photography workshop, or it might be a creative people portraiture type workshop, or it might be an off-camera flash workshop. And if I understand it correctly, Shelton, this weekend is going to be everything crammed into 2 days, like a bit of everything thrown in.
You ain't kidding. Yeah. We have lands. We're going to be up at sunrise on both days.
Yep.
And, you know, try and get some landscapes. We have a couple of models that, of course, will be at full access for the entire weekend. We're going to the American Heritage Iron Truck Display.
Right.
And we have special, you know, things to do there that I'm not allowed to divulge until the weekend.
Ah.
Sorry, Bruce, I'll tell you off air later.
That's all right.
But and we are going to photograph the crew of the paddle steamers. We've got the old wharfs. We've got street walks. We have that beautiful old shearing shed that Glyn found
right.
that we have access to. 2, and, you know, going to be absolutely fabulous. So we're going to be doing everything from portraits and off-camera flash. The models, of course, are bringing costumes. We're going to do everything from swimsuit to bridal.
Awesome.
And, the Caroline, is bringing a swimsuit just in case we wanted to get changed into a swimsuit for some reason.
Okay.
And I think that will prove popular. I have no
with
objection
the temperatures
to that.
Forecast for Echuca this weekend, I think it'll be very popular.
knowing Caroline, I really don't think she's going to care. She's amazing. She's just fantastic. We had her on a workshop, and it was fairly cold because we've just come through winter here in Melbourne, and it gets pretty darn cold. And we were doing this flash photography workshop, and I kept telling her to put her coat on. She was, you know, her little teeth are chattering, and she's only 17, the poor thing.
Yep.
And, you know, she's outside, but what a trooper. And no. She says, I can't feel the cold, as, of course, you see every goose pickle on her arms. And but she just loves being photographed, so she'd rather look good than, you know, be healthy. And that's I suppose, fair enough. If that's what she, there was no convincing.
And she's a bit of a cutie.
Oh, she's just a bit of a cutie, yeah. Tiny little thing, she's a bit of a cutie. And she's so lovely to work with. She's just such a sweet girl. So we're going to have, and then there's the antithesis of that. Also a sweet girl, but slightly crazy, and that's Natasha Humble as well, who's also coming. she's good value on a workshop because she is also a photographer, and anyone who's been following her work on 5 Minute Photographer or on her Facebook site has seen that in 5 to 6 weeks, you know, she has just grabbed this camera and really got to understand it. And but being a model on my workshops for so long, she's actually come to understand how all about light and posing for the light, directing a model to pose for the light as the priority. And she will actually, as she's being posed by one of the students on the workshop, just look at them and say, are you sure you want me to turn this way? Or and give them this instructive lesson.
Classic.
You know, she's a classic, you know. All the other models will just do exactly what the photographer asks to the best of their ability. But she'll look at them with one eyebrow slightly raised, you know, and just say, are you sure? Because she knows, you know, she's been photographed so many times now that she knows which way works and which way doesn't work. And I think that's the making of a great model.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, looks, of course, but, you know, I've photographed girls that when you look at them just, you know, in their three-dimensional reality as you're standing there talking to them, they're attractive, but point a camera at them, wow, you know, they're amazing.
Yep.
And I must admit, Soph, who does our workshops, you look at her and you say, attractive woman. Point a camera at her and the whole dynamics of it changes.
Right.
Really good models know how to pose for the light, how to pose, you know, for the perspective of the photographer. They will walk into a studio and know where the main light is, where the kicker is, where the fill light is. They know all of these things. And, you know, Natasha sort of come to this point. And being older too, you know, not old, but, you know, she's not 17 anymore.
Yep.
She has the courage of her convictions to speak to the photographers like that. And, you know, they love it. They absolutely love it because they're getting direction from the person that they're actually photographing.
Right.
And and you'll get to meet her and you'll find out what I mean, Bruce, when you point a camera at her.
Right.
She'll give you a stick if you're doing it wrong, mate. It's quite simple.
Excellent.
So it's going to be a great photography weekend. And look out, everybody who is following Bruce on audiotu.com and his fabulous photography, because he's going to come home from this workshop with some really cool stuff.
Oh, excellent.
Aren't you, Bruce?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so.
You're going to do things you've never done before, mate.
Cool.
Promise you.
Cool.
And, of course, what is your reason for coming to this workshop, mate?
Well, basically, as I was saying to you before we started recording, I'm just getting to a point where, as much as I still love audio, I feel like I need a little bit of a change. And I'm looking to take my photography a little more seriously and get it, you know, supplementing and or replacing part of or all of my income.
Wow.
And so what I'm looking to do is to, I guess, hone up on the areas of photography where I feel I need more help. And that is largely portrait work and working with flash.
Right.
To me, they are the two areas where I need more experience. I think I've got the landscape thing going pretty well.
You sure do.
Thank you, mate.
Those are fabulous panoramas you've been doing, mate.
Thank you. And I am, you know, you and I have spoken over the last couple of weeks about this, about whether I should focus on, you know, landscapes or weddings. And I must say, Kath is of the opinion that I should focus on my landscape stuff because she thinks I've absolutely got that nailed.
Yeah.
So I'm in two minds. I just don't know which way to go, whether I should.
Well,
I guess I'm looking to you for advice as the veteran of the industry.
I would say that where you are, it takes a heck of a long time and a fair bit of money to get a landscape business up and running.
Right.
To make it work for you, like, you know, say Ken Duncan or Peter Lick has.
Yep.
In this country, and you know, it takes a fair while, and I think the digital arena has changed all of that too. The interesting thing, just talking, you know, like we were a minute ago about Natasha, for instance,
yeah,
and also, you know, another friend of mine, Tamara,
right,
who has had a camera for only 3 months or something, but you know, she has learned so quickly.
Yeah.
And the great thing about digital is that it does enable you to be to learn more quickly than film.
Yes.
I absolutely have no doubt about that. And in the digital realm, people are taking fabulous photos much quicker than they used to.
Right.
That being the case, I'm wondering whether it's possible for someone, and this is an honest question, not a judgment, not a statement, but an honest question. I wonder whether people like, you know, Ken Duncan and Peter Lick, etc., Dan Paris and others, who in this country make a pretty good living on panorama landscapes, did so at an age where people were less informed, and now they have a reputation. But in many ways, there'd be a lot of up-and-coming photographers who've learned very quickly to take photographs similar to their standard, maybe different, but similar to their standard.
Right.
It's an interesting question. That being the case, if people are able to take their own photographs or perhaps buy them more cheaply, is there a living to be had from, you know, landscape photographers? Now, every landscape photographer who listens to this podcast, who's making a good living, please let me know. Let Bruce know. He wants to know.
Yeah.
How to do it. I think it's going to be very, very difficult.
Right.
And the domestic market is the easiest one to break into. But, you know, you are damn good at your panoramas and your landscapes, that's for sure.
Thank you.
But you've got a great personality for people photography also.
Right.
So, and I think all you'd need to do would be hone your people photography skills.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't take much because
exactly,
you've got a good eye.
Yeah.
And you could do it. So,
those are the things that I want to be, you know, concentrating on over this weekend, is seeing the way you work when it comes to people photography and seeing if I can bring my game up a bit in that arena.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what else we'll do. I'll spend a bit of time with you this weekend, Bruce, because I love you.
Thank you, mate.
And we'll see if we can do that. But I wonder whether our wedding photography workshop on October 10th might also be of benefit to you.
Where?
If you can get a cheap flight to come on down.
Melbourne?
Yep.
Okay.
Anyway, you think about that.
I will. I won't say yay or nay to that until after this weekend is over.
Sure. Okay.
We'll see where I stand then.
Fair enough. The reason I did ask about why you were coming on the workshop was actually another reason related to this podcast.
Okay. Mental blank. You're going to have to give me a hint.
You're bringing a little portable recorder with you.
Oh, yes, I am. Yes. Sorry, mate. Yes.
Folks, we're both just a little bit tired and a little bit flat tonight. So Bruce and I are a bit slow, which is why this podcast will be relatively short and sweet too, I think.
Yeah. Yes. No, I will be bringing the little Zoom H2 flash recorder.
Right.
So we will be recording an episode of Shutters Inc. while I'm in Echuca.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this particular podcast that we're recording right now will actually come out probably midday Sunday, when we're just about wrapping up the weekend photography workshop. So people won't have been let in on the secret that I am bringing the recorder with me.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, so that is the plan.
That at least they'll know what the next one will contain, a lot of snippets from the workshop.
That's it.
And which is interesting because you sent me an email from Jim Felder.
Yes.
And g'day, Jim, by the way. Nice to be in touch with you again and you with us. And let me just read part of it. You said, also you talked about working with clients. What would be really great is if you could wear a microphone, this is Jim speaking, and use a small MP3 player or something and record yourself while on a photo shoot or workshop. We could see or hear you in action working with those clients. I've listened to tips from the top floor, and Chris does sound seeing tours, at least that is what he calls them. He records himself speaking while he's shooting or talking to his subject or others he encounters. Sorry, some of us actually do listen to other podcasts. Yes, Jim. Thank you. Don't take it personal. I always look forward to listening to your Shutters Inc. So, Bruce.
Yeah.
In order to satisfy Jim so that he doesn't listen to too many other podcasts, sleeping around with other podcasts like he is, do you think it's possible that we do a section on the next podcast? About directing models, and perhaps you can, you know, record.
I will see what I can do.
All right.
I'm not promising it. I'll have to look into a little bit of technology and see what I've got, and whether or not we can make that work. But yeah.
Okay. I was just thinking of you holding the thing to my mouth while I'm talking to the models or something.
Oh,
you know?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of other ways around it, but we'll see. We'll see how we go.
Keep it simple, mate. Simple.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting idea. It's interesting that you mentioned this, Jim, because while I was running the flash photography workshop in Rockhampton, I was saying to the photographers, you know, they were directing the model. I'd introduced the model by name and told them all that, you know, Sarah is a model from Moulin Rouge in Paris, and she's, you know, she's here for a little while. I want some photographs. She's actually, you know, she dances in Moulin Rouge, and, you know, it was really cool. And I thought that would interest everybody. But so they knew their name. They knew the model's name. The photographers knew the model's name, and they knew a little bit about her background. But do you think any of them would use her name or even common social graces when they were directing her?
Really?
So, no, and this is not a slight on them as people, because normally under other circumstances, they would say a person's name and they would use social graces, please and thank you.
Yep.
What happens when we put our eye on the viewfinder is very interesting, because basically we remove ourselves from the real world and we become so engrossed with the image that we lose the reality. This is how war photographers, that's how Robert Capa stormed up the beach on D-Day.
Okay.
He had his eye on the viewfinder, for Pete's sake. So he was getting shot at, but he wasn't actually getting shot at because he had his eye on the viewfinder and he lived in another world.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What photographers say, and I've experienced it myself. You know, I've been in dangerous situations, but I've had my eye to the viewfinder and not felt a thing.
Been totally oblivious.
Absolutely. And I think what happens is, because they were saying, you know, okay, to the left, yep, okay, a little more, up with it, chin up, yep, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Very abrupt, very sharp. And I was standing behind going, her name is Sarah. Your name is Sarah. Sarah is her name, you know. Sort of, you know, and they were slowly getting, and they were coming out of the viewfinder and back into the real world while they were shooting. And when you're directing people, those kinds of things are very important. But it'd be interesting if I was able to, you know, help Jim along these lines. I think it's very interesting. His question here or his suggestion works because. The way a photographer directs a model in terms of explaining how she poses or where she's standing or where he's standing or they're standing or whatever and how they're standing is very important. So I'll do what I can there, Jim, but if we don't get a chance to do it in Echuca, then we'll work out maybe another way of, I don't know, doing a podcast along those lines. Maybe not in a real situation, but perhaps we can... put together a podcast about the principles of that or how to direct a shoot, because I think that's actually a very good point.
Okay.
Anyway, let's see what you can do.
I'm glad you've raised that and given me, 72 hours to think about it, because it means I can do a little bit of research and potentially get more prepared for that particular part of it than had you just sprung it on me on the day. So,
which is what I probably would have done. So, thank you to Jim for that suggestion. Okay. Good on you, Jim.
Cool.
And we got an email from Carl. Forgive our podcast this week. It's just going to be very quick and to handle some emails, folks, because we are both not feeling that great, are we, Bruce?
Not particularly.
I got a little bit of heartburn, actually. I don't know what I've eaten tonight, but I got a little bit of anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just getting old, I suppose.
That'll be it.
So, yeah. Shut up. Yeah. All right. I can say it. You can. Good-looking guy with all that hair. All right. I hate Bruce because of his fabulous hair, folks, but that's the first time I've ever said it. All right. Okay.
Email from Carl.
Email from Carl. Shall I get back on track and stop talking about how much I hate your hair? All right. Hey, guys, just listening to your last show, and I thought I'd throw in my two pennies worth. I have to say I completely agree with Shelton's take on influence from a mentor. When I first studied film photography at college, Ansel Adams was a big influence on me. Good on you, mate. What an influence to have. I love the dramatic effect of his darkroom techniques, and I guess his images pulled a heartstring with me as they were mostly of Exmoor, where I spent much of my childhood. I hope I said that correctly. However impressed I am by his techniques, I've tried to take them and adapt them to blend with my own personal style and level of ability. Another strong influence on my photography has been the Jedi Master of Photography himself. Yes, I'm talking about Shelton. Carl, you're too kind. I was just talking about this with Bruce off air, and I do not aspire to that title, but I appreciate you. Thank you for saying that. The series you did some time back on lighting gave me some great tips. For example, when Shelton talked about underexposing a shot and then letting the flash bring up the subject to a correct exposure, creating a really dynamic and striking effect. I've used that a lot, but every time I do use that idea, I try to change it a bit to alter the effect, even slightly. It means I'm making it mine and not just copying someone else. My methodology is pretty much look at as many images from great photographers, actually not just great photographers, often complete beginners get lucky, so just great images really, as I can. When I see something I really like, I try to take that technique, use it, then break it and abuse it. So now I live by take, break, abuse, only photographically, of course. And I think that's a really great take, Carl. Absolutely 100% agree with you that we are inspired by photographers, and there's nothing wrong with that. To copy them, well, then that's never going to actually satisfy you. But to be inspired by them, absolutely. Where, of course, the podcast that you're referring to is where I talked about the constraining effect of a mentor if you have the wrong take on their influence in your life. And that's, of course, where we were discussing the photographer in Rockhampton, who I think took a serious step outside of himself on the weekend I was there to see things from another angle. I hope so. I really do hope so. But you've got exactly what I'm talking about there, mate. I really do. I really think you have. That's fantastic. Then you talk about guest spots. Oh, come on. You just can't replace the great Mueller. If you're going to bring in more guests, I'm keen to hear from manufacturers of equipment. Maybe get someone from Nikon and Canon on at the same time and let them duel it out. Right. Right. And then we have this wonderful email from Landon. We got a minute to use this one?
Go for it.
Do this one. Okay. Great to hear you two again. Some feedback about mentors. So this obviously struck a chord with people. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to the podcast about mentors, it was a couple of podcasts ago, wasn't it, Bruce?
Was it two? Yes, it was. It was two ago. Yep. So it would have been 134.
Obviously, it struck a chord. So. It says, other photographers inspire me to be better than yesterday. Other photographers keep me motivated to keep making my own images. Other photographers make me want to try new things, but in my own way. I never duplicate someone else's efforts, but use that spark to make my own take on the idea, sometimes right away, but many times years and years later. Oh, how true, Landon, how true. Seeing, commenting on, critiquing other people's work really cements in my mind what I like, what I don't like, and how my own work comes to be. I absorb from all tangents, but digest the info in a way that personalizes it for me. And he spelt personalizes with a Z, which, of course, a person from the United States would do.
You just had to get that in there, didn't you?
Get what in? Sorry, Bruce, what are you talking about? Love your Landon, even though you spell an American. All right. There is no right way or wrong way, unless, and that's true, there is no right way or wrong way unless the client is not happy and you, as a creative person, are not happy with the results. I shoot any subject that inspires me, that reflects light, emits light, or casts wonderful shadows. I'm not afraid to experiment and push the envelope as how do you know you have gone far enough until you have to pull back a little creatively. When in doubt of which way to go, like your high-key or low-key approach, is to, one, understand my goals and or client goals in the outcome, or two, shoot it both ways to be safe, which is what I often do. You're only as good as your last shoot. There's no perfect photo, just the pursuit of the best you can do on the next shoot. Photography is not a destination, it's a journey. And that's so true. And that's, we were having this discussion before about, you know, my particular take on my photography. And I do find the titles that, you know, that people use maybe tongue in cheek, but there's a certain level of reverence there.
Yep.
A little bit, misapplied in my case, because I think I, like every other photographer, believe that I'm just on a journey and I want to be so much better than I actually am. But it's nice to have that reverence from, you know, my peers, you know, but thank you very much. But I believe that you're absolutely spot on there, Landon. It's a journey, not a destination. And I agree with you. In fact, I was having a conversation with a photographer friend from Rockhampton again. I know a lot of wonderful people up there. Sharon, who was talking about a photograph that she wants to do at a wedding. And she explained it to me, and I had to be very frank with her and say that, look, to be honest with you, Sharon, that concept is several decades old. It's an old thing. It's been done many times. I know you like the idea of it, but it might reflect a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not being up to date.
A dated approach.
Yeah, to your wedding photography. And I asked her, I said, how much time do you spend looking at the work of other photographers? She said, not that much. And I said, well, you've got to change that. And I gave her some names of some photographers that she could look at, especially prominent Australian wedding photographers, because that's what she does. And I said, do that. And she wondered why. And I said, look, it's not to copy their work, but to get a feel for where the industry is going. What are some of the latest imaging techniques? How can you adapt what they do into your own vision? And if you don't do that, you will be left behind. You need constant inspiration. If as a photographer you're giving out, and you're always giving out, you know, taking photographs, creating, then you need to take in. It's, you know, this constant flow that is necessary in a human being. So that inspiration is part of your journey. So you know, well done, Landon. I absolutely agree with your take on that, and I would and I really appreciate you putting that out there. Then you go on to say, spot metering is fun, but I must say I've only used it maybe 6 times. I'm a manual shooter. I look at a scene. Matrix metering just does for me what the camera thinks is right, and I quickly override the scene based on experience to get the exposure I want. I do the same thing, to be honest with you, often, Landon. And a tenth of a second glance at the histogram and the LCD image occasionally is all I need to see. I know I have nailed the idea or not. Of course, that has come from making 350,000 digital exposures. It's now a look, feel, shoot, confirm, shoot, all repeat kind of thing. And that's fair enough. Fair enough. And then he finishes by saying, as a podcast recording guest, I think it would be great to introduce some of the people on the podcast, especially while our Jedi mentor. See, there's another one of those wonderful titles again. Our Jedi mentor is off making a living. So probably referring to the end of October when I'm off to Nepal or to India and Nepal. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that, Landon. I really appreciate that. And finally, the forum at audiotu.com.
Oh, yep.
Going well. We've got some people interacting down there, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a comment on the forum from Greg. And I appreciate you being so candid, Greg, with regard to how you felt regarding the comments that we made last week on the forum about going in, buying a DSLR with a couple of lenses, the lens kit, the basic kit, and going out and shooting weddings. And Greg felt rather, and he's put this up on the forum, a little offended by that comment. And I apologize, Greg, because that was certainly not my intention to dissuade you from your photography or dissuade you from photographing weddings. Absolutely not. I would tell you to go for it. If you think you can do it, go for it. But if you read my response in the forum, you'll understand that I do have certain reservations, apprehensions about a photographer going in, buying a DSLR kit with a couple of kit lenses and shooting weddings, because I just don't think that a wedding will be well captured with lenses that don't do the job from perhaps a depth of field or wide open aperture perspective. You're working with available light, working with minimal depth of field, etc., that the kit lenses, they just don't offer. So read the forum. I hope I have answered your concerns correctly. Thank you so much for putting them up on the forum and allowing me the chance to respond, because I really don't want anyone on this podcast thinking that anything we said last week has anything to do with dissuading you. There certainly wasn't anything elitist about it, because I hate that, guys. I really hate elitism in the photography industry. And I did not mean to dissuade anybody, but I will stand up for photography, and I will stand up for wedding couples who ask photographers and entrust their day to photographers. And if your work is less than it can be, less than it should be, you're letting the couple down. And I have to be honest here and say that they should be a priority. You have to be human enough to say, this couple, I want their money. Yeah, I want their money. I got bills to pay. But what am I going to do to this couple's wedding? It's their one day, and these photographs will be looked at for the rest of their married life. And what am I going to do to that? Am I going to honor that process? Am I going to produce images that they're going to love and be grateful for in years to come? Are they going to, when they show their wedding photographs to somebody, even though the fashions have changed, are they still going to say, our photographer was fabulous and we love our wedding photos? Or are they going to say, oh boy, did we get ripped off? Or oh boy, we're not happy with our photos. It's all right to want the money. That's a good thing. It's all right to want the renown, even the recognition for photographing a wedding or being a wedding photographer. Those are perfectly human things. They're perfectly human aspects of our character. But put the couple first, and always remember that photography is a craft, an art, and where you are asked by a client, especially a wedding client, to create images that are a once-off that can't be done again, make sure that you know what you're doing. Greg, that comment isn't aimed at you or anybody. It's just that last week's discussion really was about understanding who you are as a photographer, what you're able to create to be yourself, to be unique, and then honor the profession enough, honor yourself enough to price yourself accordingly. And this is going to be something that occurs time and time again. And I'm the biggest hypocrite of all. I have been told time and time again by friends who love my photography that I seriously undercharge, which is why my wedding prices all went up for 2010.
Cool.
I hope it works, but I'll tell you now, I'm a hypocrite, but I'm learning after 20-odd years.
Maybe you should try the approach that I suggested to Richard that Richard promptly forgot about.
With the raise your price
10%. Just raise it 10% for everyone until you feel some kickback from the market.
Yeah. Well, it's not a bad idea, mate. Not a bad idea at all. I don't know that I'll apply it, but I think in principle it really works. I mean, that's a great idea. If you're listening to this podcast and you're going to give it a go, keep us in touch as to how that goes. I think it's a fabulous idea.
Well, I am going to be doing that with my photography as I take it forward professionally.
Cool.
I will be utilizing that approach.
Yeah.
And I should say, Kat's very proud of me because I've made my first photographic sale this week.
Wow, fantastic. Tell me about it. Tell us all about it.
I did mention, I think it was on last week's podcast, that I was getting up very early on Saturday morning to go down to Kirribilli, which is, for those who don't know Sydney, the suburb directly on the northern side of the harbour opposite the Opera House and Circular Quay. Mm-hmm. Because one of my work colleagues, who is an English guy who's out here for a while, he's renting this apartment that's just a couple of blocks back from the waterline. And he has this fantastic view out of his, you know, living room window directly down the barrel of Circular Quay, you know. So if he looks, you know, just 5 degrees to the left, he sees the Opera House. And if he looks 15 degrees to his right, he can see the bridge.
Wow.
And upon seeing my canvas print of the Tabauri Lake sunrise and getting into a discussion about how I'd shot that, how I'd used multiple frames and then stitched them together in Photoshop, he said to me, he said, "Man, I wish I could do something like that out of my living room window, because I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah." And he told me where he was. And he said, "You know, I don't have an SLR. I've just got my iPhone and I can't shoot a wide enough angle on the iPhone." And I said to him, I said, "Well, mate, I can come and shoot it for you if you want." And he said, "You know, oh, that'd be fantastic if you would, you know." So,
yeah. So
basically we organized that Saturday morning last weekend that I would head in there very early before the sunrise, because I said to him, the thing about where you are situated and the view that you have of the Opera House, which is to your south, and the bridge, which is to your west, and we being in the southern hemisphere, you need to shoot that photograph first thing in the morning when the sun's rising in the east and shining on both the Opera House and the bridge.
Yeah.
And you want that angle to be low light. You know, it's got to be the sun just coming up over the horizon and giving you that low angle light to really make it just snap.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the plan, that I would go down there Saturday morning. So anyway, I woke up at about 4 o'clock and
I
hadn't planned on getting up until about, you know, 4:30, quarter to five. And I figured, well, close enough, I might as well just get up and go now. So I did. And of course, I got in there to Kirribilli, you know, probably half an hour before I really needed to be there. And it was then that I went down to the waterline and I shot that panorama that I posted a link to on 5 Minute Photographer.
Yes.
But then after that, I went up to Owen's place and, you know, we went into his living room and opened up the windows and I set up and I shot, you know, probably 3 or 4 sets of the panorama over probably a 40-minute period, just as the light changed. But unfortunately, it turned out to be a really ordinary morning because the clouds were on the horizon and blocking the sun.
Yeah.
So all the light was just diffuse light. There was no direct light whatsoever. And as you can see from that other panorama that I shot, it was quite heavy cloud cover all the way across the city. So it was quite a grey, you know, cloud mass hanging over the city.
Makes for a great photo, though.
Well, having said that, you know, the panorama still came up really well. And I showed him the image yesterday at work. And he said, "Mate, that is fantastic. You know, how much, you know, what can I pay you for it?" And so we agreed on a price, and contrary to, you know, Richard's new philosophy, I have consented to give him a digital file.
Yep.
Because he knows that he will be going back to England at some time, and he's a bit nervous about having either a print or a canvas made and it not surviving the journey.
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay, well, under those circumstances, all right, I'll give you a digital file and then you can get it printed when you get back to England." So, yeah, so I've made my first sale. So, thank you.
You know,
mate.
I could be very wrong. I could be so totally wrong about landscape photography in your case. And, you know, I've never considered it, but then I'm a people photographer. I can shoot my way around a landscape, no problem. But I'm a people photographer. It's what I love to do.
For sure.
In your case, I might be so totally wrong, right? Jess sounded almost like, you know, a teenager then. Like, so totally wrong, right?
Totally wrong, dude.
Totally. you may be, maybe you shouldn't listen to me, mate. Maybe you shouldn't listen. You know, I mean, what a good have I ever done anybody? So, give it some thought. I'm really happy for you, though. That's fantastic.
So you know? Am I. I am excited about it.
It's a bit of a feeling, isn't it? It's a bit of a cool feeling. I'll never forget the first time I went into a news agency here mm-hmm. in Australia, and I'd shot my first front cover. And I walked into the news agency, and there it was up on the shelves with all the other magazines, and I just felt like standing there going, ha, 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 everybody, ha, 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 look, ha, ha, my cover, you know, yeah. This is like 1987 or something crazy, you know, and so, you know, now it's sort of like, oh yeah, you know, but back at the time, I just wanted everybody in the shop to sort of, look at me, I photographed that. It's a really cool feeling.
Absolutely.
So congratulations, mate. Well done.
Thank you.
And I think that you'll come back from the Echuca weekend with a whole bunch of new ideas. So it'll be interesting to see as this podcast progresses.
Yep.
What Bruce Williams does with his photography from this point on. We'll keep you posted, folks.
One thing that I did pick up from, you know, Richard's discussion was about... I'm not sure if he mentioned this on the podcast or if it was just what he'd written in his posts on 5 Minute Photographer about, you know, after August exposure, he made the statement that clients will no longer be viewing digital images. It's prints or nothing.
Yeah.
And I took that... actually, I will confess, the panorama that I posted a link to on 5 Minute Photographer has a very blue look to it in terms of the color tones. And I have since reworked that image a little bit and changed the color balance a bit to make it a little less blue. And I actually think it works even better.
Uh-huh.
So I took that and I went over to Paxton's at Macquarie Shopping Centre yesterday when I was having lunch.
Right.
And I said to them, what's the biggest print that you can do in store, you know, today? And it was a 12 by 18. So essentially, I've got a print of this panorama, 18 inches wide and about, you know, 3 inches high. You know, hell of a lot of white space on the sheet. Yes. But you hold that out in front of you and it just eats looking at it on a computer monitor for breakfast.
Yeah.
It is just another playing field, and I totally understand why, you know, Richard came back with that philosophy that, you know, clients will no longer be looking at my images digitally, you know, whether it be on a computer monitor or on a TV screen. It's prints on paper.
Yes, absolutely.
I think he made the comment or you made the comment about we are human beings, we are a tactile species, and there's just something about that physical, you know, print that just registers differently to the brain.
Yes,
and
it
I
is.
Totally understand that now.
Innately human.
Yeah.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. We are a tactile species.
Yep.
And there's something about holding a print and seeing the print that is lost a little bit these days in the, you know, the Flickr sort of photo bucket society that we live in.
Yep.
So many photographs never see the light of day in terms of a print, and they're awesome.
And you know what? Even to the same extent, having a digital photo frame hanging on the wall, while I absolutely love it because I get to see so many more of the photographs that mean something to, you know, all of our family, there is also that aspect of it's just not the same.
No,
as a real print.
I don't know what it is. You'd think, what a great idea, having a constant slideshow in a frame. But the idea just does not interest me. I see a commercial benefit. A lot of restaurants are using these digital frames for their menus.
Yes.
You know, and they have pictures of the food and then the menu, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? But for me, if I was running a studio, maybe I'd have digital frames in the lobby, in the waiting room or something, you know, with lots of my slideshows from all my images and la la la. But if I was presenting something to a customer, I would probably prefer to show them a beautiful print. Mind you, in the 80s, a long time ago, when I first was learning in a studio, what he used to do was project the images. He used a projector and made slides from his negatives.
Right.
And he projected the images on a wall. And he did this because what he wanted to do was sell large prints to make a lot of money, of course.
Right.
And so what he would do is he'd project the image because they'd say, oh, look, we only really want, oh, you know, how much is that one? Oh, that's $95 and it's an 8x12 or something like that, you know. And they go, oh, that's all. Well, and then he'd project it on the wall. And, you know, they'd be sitting in a room, their living room size.
Yeah.
And he'd project the image to the size of an 8x12 on the wall. And it just looked so piddly, tiny, small.
Yeah.
That they thought, what's the point of spending $95 on something we're never going to see? It's just like a dot on our wall. And he'd upsize them to 30x40-inch prints and hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth just by projecting on the wall.
Yeah, right.
So there was a certain amount of salesmanship that went into that, and it was very effective. But I agree with Richard, there is something there, and your experience proves it, there's something innately human and appealing and attractive about printing, you know.
Yep.
So, yeah, I would agree with you. I would absolutely agree with you. So I'm looking forward to – are you going to bring some prints with you to Echuca, mate, that I can have a look at?
I will.
No? Oh, awesome. Oh, fantastic. Oh, great. I'm really looking forward to having you there, mate. It's going to be great. Everybody, all the Shutters Inc. listeners are looking forward to having the great Bruce Williams along as well. You're a celebrity, mate. Deal with it.
Yeah, okay. If you think so. It's going to be good. I am so looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. It'd be nice to get my camera out and shoot. You know, it's funny. Yeah. I work as a photographer, and the thing I do the least is actually take photographs.
Well, I've been saying to people, you know, Shelton and I have been doing this photography podcast for 4.5 years. Was it just over 4 years.
Good Lord.
And I've never seen you with a camera in your hand. I'm looking forward to that. For all I know, you might be crap. You might be total crap.
If I've come up to Sydney, we've grabbed a quick meal somewhere. You've seen me working at the PMA Expo.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've never seen me actually.
But I've never seen you actually taking a photo.
No. Well, all going to change on the weekend. All going to change on the weekend. I'm going to take so many damn photographs.
Awesome.
I really want to, you know, I really just want to shoot something, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like one of them good old boys. I just won't go out shoot me something, you know? By the way, if you are a good old boy and you're listening to this podcast, I didn't mean no offense. Meanwhile, Shelton alienated all our listeners from Alabama.
Yeah.
Run, Forrest, run. We should stop now. We really should.
Probably. All right, mate. Well, thank you once again.
Oh, thank you.
And sorry, it was probably a little bit of a free-form discussion this week, but...
We've got a lot coming at you in the next podcast, though. It's going to be very interesting to see what we come up with at random on 2 days of constant shooting.
Yeah.
And Bruce running around with a little portable recorder. That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm not making any guarantees about what the next episode of Shutters Inc. is going to be like, people.
Nice. We'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Knowing how our workshops run and knowing the people who are going to be there, you're going to come up with gold.
Cool.
Cool. Awesome. You're going to come up with gold. Good stuff.
Excellent.
All right, that's my promise to you.
Cool.
I have been known to break a promise or two, but that's my promise to you.
Cool bananas. All right, then. In the meantime, one thing Shelton and I have noticed is that the email forwarding off my server is not working properly, so the shelton@audiotu.com alias, for some reason, it's just not happening. So... if you want to email us and you don't have Shelton's email address already, just flick it through to me at studio@audiotu.com and I will forward anything I get for Shelton to him. Please, if you've got anything you want us to discuss or you've got any feedback on what we've discussed today in this episode, please drop me an email. Or, of course, swing by either of the two forums and drop your 2 cents worth
there. Let us know there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to be down there as often as possible.
Fantastic. All right, mate. Well, I will see you in, 48 hours?
Oh, yeah. Less than that, probably.
Yeah.
Probably
about 48 hours. It's 9:30 now.
Yeah.
And I think I get into Melbourne Airport at about 5:45. So it's going to be about 6 o'clock when we leave.
Oh, yeah.
Just after 6 when we leave Melbourne. And it's about two and a half hours. Is that right?
Maybe a little more. Yeah, especially if you stop and grab something to eat or whatever. It's a little bit of a drive. I think it depends on who's behind the wheel. Who's driving you up?
Karen's husband.
Oh, okay.
Noel?
Right. Noel, yep, lovely bloke. Yep.
Cool.
Then I really don't know. I've never driven with Noel, but if it was somebody I knew better, I'd be able to gauge whether you're going to get there, earlier or later than otherwise, normally planned.
Cool.
But either way,
it's going to be good.
Everyone's going to know from all the photographs on 5 Minute Photographer, the photographs on Audio to You, photographs that'll be all over Facebook. Everyone's going to know how much fun. Oh, and I will be probably making another slideshow like I did with my Rockhampton workshop for YouTube. So keep your eyes and ears open on for that as well. If you haven't seen the YouTube video on my Rockhampton wedding workshop, you should check that out. That's a bit of fun. But we're no doubt going to have another slideshow for YouTube so you can see how the Shelton Muller Glyn Lavender creative photo workshops are run. They are crazy events. We have a lot of fun, but people go home having learned something. That's what I really like.
Speaking of which, are you announcing anything yet about your plans for February?
No, not yet. They're still being confirmed.
Okay.
We are looking to come to the United States in February. Right. There are some photo retailers there that are very keen to work with Glyn and I to run workshops. Provided that we really put on the Australian accent, so got to talk through the
mind. You've got to say crikey a lot.
Yeah, crikey. Yeah, love crikey. That's a bloody good photo. Yeah. So we'll bring all that charm to the United States for you.
Excellent.
That's our plan. But I'll keep you posted. The moment I know something for sure, man, trust me, it's coming up on the podcast.
Cool. All right, mate. Well, I'll see you Friday night.
Looking forward to it, buddy.
All right, mate.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been another audio2u.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com. Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@audio2u.com.